doctor. Yes, I am Dr. Ron. I surely am. I can't shake that off. But we do have a guest here on Liberty Calling Beacon that is a real doctor. A real doctor. His name is Dr. Ed Ward, MD, a primary practitioner. And now he's also an investigative scientific researcher and writer. He works a lot in the 9/11 area. Many of you, I'm sure, have read his article, the U.S. Government's Usage of Atomic Bombs, Domestic and at the World Trade Center. That was published at the Price of Liberty website in September of 2006. And now he's produced a follow-up article subtitled The Mysterious Craters. We need to speak to him about that, don't we? I mean, don't we like mysteries, right? And it's published at the same site. It's with a great pleasure that I introduce Dr. Ed Ward. Good evening, Dr. Ward. Welcome to the Liberty Calling Beacon. Pull up a chair and let's talk.
Hi, Dr. Larson, and thank you for inviting me to the show.
You're really welcome. Let me share something with her because I'd like to get intimate with people out there. We had a mess up in communications initially, and I put a wrong phone number down when I sent an email to him, and my spam filter and my computer apparently caught his mail coming back. I understand later that he sent two emails to me and tried to reach my phone. So when I got in touch with him, he was, well, I don't know, just a little tip. I mean, I understand that. I mean, right? Just a little tip.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, and I said, okay, I'll eat crow. I wonder if he'll eat crow, and he did. He was a good crow eater. And anyway, ever since we've had kind of smiling conversations, and I really enjoy working with him. We're going to be together on Bill Deagle, Dr. Bill Deagle's show. What is the show called? It's called the Nutramedical Hour, and it's on GCN Network from 2 to 4 Central Time, and we'll be together, I guess, during that period. I guess we'll be together for 2 hours, I don't know. And it's going to be on Thursday, next Thursday. Bill is a really bright guy, and he actually, when I was working on the World Trade Center issue, what he did was... what Bill did was referred me to Dr. Ward, and it was a while before I contacted him, but I'm really glad I did because he comes with a fresh perspective on all of this. Dr. Ward, would you do me just a big favor? I know you have an MD. Tell me a little bit about your education and training in medicine.
Well, I have pretty much a minor in physics and chemistry. I'm a medical technologist in my first degree, an associate degree, and a bachelor's degree in medical technology with several credentials from organizations for that. And then went to medical school and have an MD from LSU Medical Center in New Orleans. About 20 years of practice in the medical field of a physician, and about 10 years of experience in medical laboratory technology.
You're in a tough field in a way, you know, because I was thinking that you're covering the broad spectrum, right, when you're dealing with medicine in that area. And certainly, you must have dealt with patients in that period of time that have been got an excessive radiation of one form or another. I'm even thinking of sunlight, right? So you kind of know that area one way or the other. When we spoke on the phone, I said, hey, listen, I'm a physicist, and it's, you know, I've been for all this nuclear stuff and a variety of other things, but things change. And when I decided, as I mentioned earlier in the first broadcast, to get to delve into the 9/11 issue, I mean, I really had to do some brushing up, you know, I just had to do it. The advantage that I have over the person on the street is that I've learned to think like a physicist, and Dr. Ward, no doubt, is thinks like a scientist and a medical doctor. So there's an advantage, even if one has not worked lately in a particular field, one can read the literature, one knows where to go, and one, can spot hokum from Yoakum or something, good stuff and the bad stuff in that area. What I'm wondering, Dr. Ward, is how you got involved in this research and your purpose in doing so. What's your end? What do you think the product will be, and what will that product be used for, or is that is that part of your reason for doing it?
Well, as far as my general entry into government abuses and constitutional abuses, it started with family rights. And the more I progressed into causes and constitutional abuses and the tyranny of this government against families, I saw the deeper things went, and eventually wound up at 9/11 with the large percentage of cancers and emphysema, COPD from the firemen and the World Trade Center workers got interested in 9/11 and saw that there were some things that just weren't consistent with anything except a large thermonuclear blast, well, or small thermonuclear blast, which is large heat and large power.
I was just going to laugh. I said, even a small one's a big one.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to say, small.
Kind of hard to say. I've actually gone through that website, and I see you have several other papers. You cover, I wouldn't say you cover the water pump, you cover other causes, and I saw in that first paper, in the first paper there, toward the end of it, you dealt with issues that were beyond technical in that area, and I thought it was just really interesting. I said, guess what? We have a technologist, a human tech, you know, a medical technologist in the generic term that's really concerned about human beings. You know, I said to a friend the other day, I've had a wry comment on MDs, please accept it as a joke. I'm sure you've heard this before. But I asked my friend, it was Drew, it's my friend Drew, my Marine friend Drew. I said, Drew, you know, doctors have to take two courses nobody ever knows about. And you know what they are? He said, I have no idea. And I said, well, they got to be experts in tardiness and arrogance. You know, it's got to be both of those things. I hope you're not cringing with that one.
No, you pretty much, I don't know about the arrogance, but you definitely have me on tardiness.
Tardiness in that area. Let me read something from your first paper, because people, this will set the stage a little bit. And by the way, the title of the page is U.S. Government's Usage of Atomic Bombs -domestic-WTC by Edward M.D. It's dated September 25, 2006, and it says as follows: Declassified, August 1958. Mere fact that the U.S. has developed atomic munitions suitable for use in demolition work. Declassified, January 1967. Quote: The fact that we are interested in and are continuing studies on a weapon for minimizing the emerging flux of neutrons and internal induced activity, declassified March 1976, the fact that the weapon laboratory interest in minimum residual radiation, that's MRR devices, is now available. We can talk about that term. The fact of successful development of MRR devices. The factual evidence indicates, according to Dr. Ward, that our government is using and has used third or possibly fourth generation hydrogen bombs domestically and internationally. The evidence for international usage is not quite as strong as a domestic usage, but when domestic usage is considered, the international usage seems inescapable. The process of exclusion based on the unknown facts leaves only one viable option for the destruction of the World Trade Center buildings, a relatively pure hydrogen bomb. And as you know, the World Trade Center towers were struck by two jet airliners in 9/11, the impacts occurring roughly an hour apart. Then about 40 minutes to an hour or so after the impact, the building that was hit in each case collapsed from the point of impact downward, throwing powdered concrete and massive steel beams upward and outward as the line of collapse moves steadily downward. Now, if you folks have ever looked at the videos of the collapsing of one of the towers and the amount of debris left on the ground after the collapse, you might have thought, man, I've heard this before by people, by the way, there is so much damage. God, a nuke must have done it. Dr. Ward, will you tell me about the three or four pieces of physics evidence, physical evidence, not just physics, but physical evidence you had in hand when you wrote this first report that cause you to conclude in that report that these towers were brought down by persons unknown using, say, one or two hydrogen bombs or a pure fusion nuclear bomb. I'm wondering if you could just point out those key ones, three or four.
Well, it's, first off, there was the massive amount of heat that was left residual for weeks after the buildings came down, being passed off as fires. And pretty much anybody who knows anything about pulverized concrete, if you lay some over a fire, it pretty much doesn't burn. It smothers out fires. Now, it may retain heat for a while, but it's not going to retain it for weeks. Also, there were some cars that were around the World Trade Center that had very unique burn patterns to them, that one side would be burned and doors would be fused, and the other side would be completely normal looking. There were elevated tritium levels at the site, passed off as minor at first, and they had so much to be dealt with at the time, I just kind of gave them mention at first. The update deals with them a lot more. Aerosolized metals in the air, vaporized steel, the amount of power that it would take to hurl beams hundreds of feet away. We're talking about tons and tons of beams being thrown 300, 400, 500 feet away. The insurance reports of damage around the area showed that missiles were thrown as far as 1.6 miles away and embedded in the roofs of houses, sides of the houses. What I think were EMP results from the Compton effect, of which can come from also massive explosions but are also common in thermonukes, shows a wide area where electricity was destroyed. There were cameras that were taking videos of the dust cloud either completely quit or show signs of interference, just as the dust cloud tends to reach the camera. Vaporization of 200,000 gallons of water in the cooling towers on top of both that never made it to the ground.
Yeah, there are quite a few you mentioned there. I wonder if, you know, I thought about this actually middle of the night. I was up early in the morning. I was up around 4 or 5 a.m. this morning, writing some of this stuff and looking again over at your papers and looking at the research. I'm wondering if you've ever actually taken a pencil and tried to estimate what kind of energy would be required to throw a beam about 600 feet or feet away. Do you have any idea about how many beams you think were probably thrown out there? Just a ballpark estimate.
I never have taken and done the physics work on it. One, because it's not only taking the beams and throwing them, you have to rip them out of the side of the building. You have to rip pieces of steel an inch, 2 inch, 6 inches thick. So it's more than just taking the beam and throwing it. There's, you know, just literally hundreds of tons of concrete that is pulverized into a predominance of less than 100 microns size particles. There's so much damage done, I wouldn't even begin to try
to mention that area. It's a tough thing to work at. I really understand that. With regard to just thinking of the pulverization, I guess you probably know some of the work by Jim Hoffman and a number of other people. As a matter of fact, some of the lab work that was done talks about a wide distribution of charges, of a wide distribution in that area. So there wasn't just powder. I mean, I always thought there was powder in the beginning. I mean, I was informed, somebody had suggested I look at this, because he said there was just nothing but powder. It just turns out there was quite a bit more there. What I'm wondering is, let me just throw out a possibility.
Well, we're talking about 2 billion pounds of powder.
Well, it's okay, but still that's a lot of powder.
Yeah.
That's a lot of powder. I had mentioned to you a gentleman that had done some research on that, and he's a Canadian. And the numbers he came up with, he's a chemist, and he said, I looked at his math, and I said, I think this guy was a physicist who was hiding out you know, doesn't want to be called a physicist, you know. But the numbers he worked up seem to indicate, and I've checked the math, but not heavily, right? And I've checked the math, and it seems to indicate at this point, that's, you know, that's the scientist in me saying that. It seems to indicate that, that if you look at the energetics of this thing, and you actually get into the question of free energies, free surface energy, and you know that term from your chemistry background for MD stuff, you know.
Right.
This free energy of the surfaces, you can actually figure this out by using an Instron machine and then looking at the surface area when you do a break. You learn that business about how much energy is released. So you can do a calculation just on the amount of energy it would take to produce that distribution. And he did it. I mean, I was astounded. You believe me? I was astounded. I looked at that. I said, this guy's got patience. He did the calculations. You and I might not want to do that, right? I hang around with those integral signs. I do the things with letters, not with numbers, you know? So he did this, and what he concluded was that there was enough energy, there was enough potential energy, that is the energy stored in an object that's held so many feet above ground, you know, have so many foot pounds, so much in there that's turned into kinetic energy and heat to be able to produce that distribution on the ground. That's what he concluded. And, you know, I'm going to look at that further. You remember, I think I mentioned to you, I'm this guy that's real strong on hypotheses and establishing, right? Establishing experiments to prove.
600 tons of explosives?
Well, there's 600 tons of explosives, but here's the deal. And I'll get into this to explain something here. It turns out, the gravity works out. The gravity will do it if you're dealing with free-falling concrete. I've mentioned some of you people have been listening to me speaking on American Voice Radio and Drew's show or variety of other places, of other networks, and I've spoken about the work by Gordon Ross. I just kind of like that work. And what he did, I think it was just astounding work. It was just so good. What he did is he looked at the collapsing of the structure on the video. And Dr. Ward, I'm sure you have that. I'm sure you have that paper already.
Correct.
And when he showed very nicely, he said, he showed something very nicely. I'll tell you what he saw. He said, I kept on looking at that video and scratching my head. He said, I can see that building coming apart in major sections. And so what he did is he put together a four-phase model, not a physical model, you know, a mathematical model that shows that the major sections break away. Say the core breaks away, and the floors break away, and the outer periphery breaks away and falls to the ground, and it leaves the concrete home free. You know, it comes down there crashing. So whether we can prove that or not at this point, I just don't know. But it makes a ton of sense. At least if I look at the video, I see a one-to-one correspondence. I don't know whether you have, Dr. Ward, looked at the video.
I think it's fairly consistent the way the towel came
in. It is, it really is. I think it's genius work, you know, and it's simple. He said, I'm just a mechanical engineer. Just call me, not even doctor. There's no doctor there. He owns a construction company. He's a real practical guy. The question I'm wondering, Dr. Ward, is the following. Now, we've got to stretch our minds in this case. There's going to be, you can imagine having a ton of RDX. I mean a lot of it. I mean, I don't mean a little. Well, I mean a lot of it, like 10, 20 tons or something of RDX. This is stuff, nasty, nasty, nasty explosive. A 3x3 piece, you put it in a car, around a car, and the car is gone. The engine, everything else, gone. Everything that is complete, done. And what I'm wondering is, what other sources of energy other than a hydrogen bomb could have produced these key effects?
To me, this is fairly well explained in the update article, not so much in the original article, but the 8-ton, 6-inch thick I-beam that is bent into a horseshoe, there is, as far as I can tell, there is nothing even envisioned that can do that other than a thermonuclear blast. There are multiple other steel columns that are also documented that are not bent to the degree, but appear to be just not vaporized, but flashed with such a heat that they bend almost on their own weight. Many small atoms of metal molecules were found mixed in with the debris, which was, again, small size, but these are much, much smaller than 50 microns. These are down to 0.07 microns.
So wait a minute, I missed something here. Pieces of metal, Seth?
Yeah, almost, well, molecular size pieces that are down to a size of 0.07 microns.
Okay, so the metal flakes are little metal pieces, okay.
Right. These, you're talking about a very small percentage of these that would have stayed around. Anything smaller than 10 microns still tends to stay self-suspended in the air. So when you look at what fell to the ground, it's all going to be tend to be mostly stuff that doesn't settle, like larger than 10 microns.
Right.
And that's why smaller stuff wasn't found, according to one of the 9/11 scholars. There was very little small micron stuff found in the debris. Well, of course there's going to be a very small amount because it tends to stay suspended.
It'll move along with that pyroclastic flow. Ladies and gentlemen, can I make a corny joke? We're a paradox. Okay, don't worry about it. But the real problem here is that pyroclastic flow, and it just carries stuff with it. I mean, it just goes with it. So the vapor particles will disappear, and they just go off into the wild view.
They'll go around the world.
That's really what it amounts to, and of course you get there was vaporization of metal. Also in that case, but it takes a fair temperature. By the way, I saw those bent beams, and the thought that I had was the following. Let's see if you concur in this thing. If we get music, I'll wait for that. That's okay. Let me ask the question. There may have been two effects here. Number one, a softening of the beam, which the ASTM people, say it happens around 500 centigrade. And there could have been the crush of the building down that tend to bow these pieces, too. So you may not have had to go to any tremendous temperatures. And I bet you were getting music. Do we have music here? Yours good. Yeah, my ears are pretty good. We'll be back in about 3 minutes, I guess, something like this, on the Liberty Calling Beacon with Dr. Ed Ward. Good evening, everybody. Didn't wait for my cue, did I? Hey, listen, been off the air for a few years, but it'll happen. Smooth Ron gets back. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back, Dr. Ward.
Thank you. Let me just answer your comment about this 8-ton, 6-inch I-beam. Beams in the World Trade Center got progressively smaller the higher you went up the building. It's highly unlikely that a beam of this size is going to be up in the elevated areas. If you look at some of the other pictures I have of some beams that aren't quite bent to the same degree as this 6-inch beam,
right.
Where did the heat for this beam come from, if that's what did it? It certainly wasn't up in the higher areas where the fire was. This was all down below. This would have been down below, like the 16-inch cores that vaporized. This wasn't a beam that was subject to heat, more than likely. No one's ever identified, even though every beam in the World Trade Center was marked when it was put up as to its placement. Nobody's ever identified where this beam came from, and it's highly doubtful it was in the upper areas where there was a minimal fire.
Minimal fire. I'm not even thinking about fire, though, because I think all of us can discount the flame temperatures, couldn't I? They're really low. I'm thinking about because you're going to get with explosives, you're going to get a fireball anyway.
That's the thing with conventional explosives versus thermonukes. is while it's a kind of a similar process, there's a marked degree difference in the amount of temperature generated by an explosion. An explosion is made to make pressure, and it, as a byproduct, it has some heat. A thermonuke gives out the heat required to make 5 acres of land turn into an incendiary at 1,500 degrees.
Yeah, that's a fireball. Was that actually what happened? And by the way, in the heating, I looked on the heating effect of neutrons. There's an interesting thing here, and that's why, you know, I'm having you on here, Dr. Ward, but why I began to actually dig into the theoretical aspects of neutron heating. It turns out the following is true. If you try to heat something externally or with shock, external shock waves or whatever it is, there's an effect that's called reflectivity. In other words, if you don't have the right, what's called an impedance match between the thing that you're trying to send sound into or energy into or whatever it happens to be from a distance, say with a blast from an explosive, there's a tremendous amount of reflectivity off of that. I mean, it's a ton of reflectivity. Not much gets in. But let me give you something neat here. If you irradiate that, say that steel or whatever you have with neutrons, neutrons are negative or have no charge, right? So that they, and use that as a reason for yourself, a simple reason, they penetrate really easily. The actual numbers that you come by, you get a tenfold effect for the same amount of energy. In other words, that the heating of the steel or whatever is being radiated takes place by what are called elastic and inelastic collisions. You don't need to be a physicist to understand that term, right? Inelastic means it's taken up in energy, heat energy, and then the billiard ball effect in the material. So you can get substantial heating with neutrons themselves. The second nice effect, of course, is that neutrons penetrate a large amount of distance, so you can actually get a somewhat uniform amount of heating. And one of the reasons why fourth generation nukes are looked at with great interest by the military is that they can penetrate the wall of a tank and kill the people inside. Not a nice thought, but they can penetrate. I know, Dr. Ward, you looked at this yourself, but they can penetrate, just go right through, you know, just in and kill the people like that. So the flash does it. The thing that I'm looking at here, and I want to get on to your second page. I just have one question here. You talk about fourth generation nukes, and I hope we're talking about the same things. Fourth generation nukes, if people are just somewhat familiar with literature, you don't have to be an expert, but maybe you're curious about nukes or something like this. You may know the name Gisponer, G-S-P-O-N-E-R, and he works at the Independent Research Institute in Geneva. He's got a bunch of papers out, and he talks about first, second, fourth generation nukes. And the ones I'm talking about are the pure fusion nukes. You know, everybody remembers the Hiroshima bombs and a variety of other things and later bombs. In those cases, they were using plutonium or uranium-235, and they were so-called splitting the atom, you know, that sort of stuff. Out of this comes debris, radioactive debris. What a mess. What a mess. But if you do something different, you actually put atoms together, you get a nuclei together, you get an effect. It'll turn out, if you actually do the calculation, that if you take tritium, that's hydrogen with three neutrons, I guess it is, right? And deuterium, which has got two. If you push them together, if you calculate the E equal MC square factor, what's the total equivalent energy of all the mass, and then you squeeze them together and you look at the coalesced product together and you look at the mass here, there's a difference in the mass. That delta in the mass goes into E is equal to MC squared. Man, that's a bunch of energy. But you gotta get over an energy barrier and you gotta push them together. That's the real problem with fourth generation nukes. Dr. Ward, are you talking about that kind of fourth generation nuke or something that's more like a neutron bomb?
I use neutrons because people are very familiar with them. But if you go down the first article, you'll also see that in, I believe it was 1979, they released the fact that they could not only select neutrons, they could select gamma rays, they could select X-rays. There are many other types of power that could have been used. It's just neutrons had vast evidence for their being around, their small size, and it was the one that I most identified with.
Right. So then, in other words, you're still dealing with a fission fusion type weapon.
Well, but that's what I had proof of that was admitted by the government. Now, if you look at people like Cohen and his famous red mercury, which in reality is probably lithium-6, there is adequate evidence that these compounds like lithium or red mercury and other similar type compounds exist and can do the job. Now, there's more than that out there. There's Z material work and nanotechnology that seems to have some good background, and if you follow all of my leads and references in the article, they'll take you to some of those articles where you can see
in that area. Yeah, the matter of fact, with the, you're referring to Sam Cohen, Dr. Sam Cohen, who's the father of the neutron bomb. He's been claiming for some time that red mercury is a powerful explosive-like chemical known as a pyrotechnic. The energy released during its reaction is enough to directly compress the secondary without the need for a fission primary. In other words, the secondary is, remember we talked about tritium deuterium, folks out there listening to the audience. He claims that he learned that the Soviet scientists perfected the use of red mercury and used it to produce a number of softball-sized pure fusion bombs, which he claims were made in large numbers. Now, the thing is, he's the only one that makes that claim, as far as I know. And I checked with the bulletin of the American scientists, and they're not into it. I'm in a quandary about this, because he's a real bright guy. There's no question about it.
Well, there are other people that do go along with phallotechnics, and lithium-6, which has a crimson color, is definitely one of them.
Well, are you talking about lithium-6 deuterium? I don't want to throw a lot of big words around. Hey, listen, if you threw that at me, I'd smart too, you know. but here's the issue, is that there are a lot of combinations that you can use that are essentially tritium, deuterium, hydrogen, deuterium, etc. One of the ingredients is lithium deuteride. In other words, that's one of the possibilities.
Okay. I believe that it was a deuteride.
Yeah, and that's one of the two items. One of the two, and then you use that with tritium to produce that effect.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're really not having a separate conversation. Put your ears down. Put your ears to this loudspeaker and enjoy it. Hey, listen, this is good stuff. By the way, let me throw something out. This is purely off the wall, if I may do it, Dr. Ward.
Sure.
Purely off the wall. It has nothing to do with what I'm saying. You notice I'm laughing. I'm having fun. We're having a lot of fun here. I learned a number of years ago something. My friend Drew has picked it up. He really likes what I say. You remember Drew the Marine, that guy?
Mm-hmm.
It's the following. What I try to do when I do the very best of my life, don't always accomplish this, is to judge everything that I do, or plan to do by three standards. And they must all maintain themselves or have to make some change somewhere. And that is to create value, have fun, and tell your own truth. I mean, do all three. And I've generally found my life works well. I had a friend come up to me. I was working for a company. I don't like working for companies. And a marketing deal. And Bill came up and he said, and I told him about these three-legged stool. And he looked at me and he had a big smile on his face. He sat down next to me. He said, see that little poster you have up in the wall? I said, yeah. He said, those three items, how are you doing on them? I put my head down and blinked my eyes. And I said, He said, How many hold true for you, Ron? I said, oh, gosh. I don't think there may be one if I stretch it. So I got out of that deal. Anyway, I had to throw that out. I kind of throw that idea out there because it's such a powerful one in that thing. Yeah, well, about red mercury, it's kind of a mystery to me. I think I look at a lot of Gisponer's work, And I say that he doesn't mention it there, you see, and he's a pretty distinguished sort of guy. He's talking about antimatter, use of antimatter, everybody's heard
right.
of it. And I will give you a piece of information, and I think Dr. Ward knows this already, that actually antimatter's been created already. There are a bunch of labs working on it. And antimatter's one way of doing it. Put antimatter, think about this a minute, folks. If you put antimatter and matter together, you get a big boom. That's really what happens. And that produces the energy that'd be necessary to compress the pill. That's the deuterium, tritium, right? You gotta compress it. Remember, you gotta squeeze them together to force them in. And then you have to put a high energy spike with a pico power laser or something like that in that area. But it's, so that's one of the ways, and there are a few other ways, and that, but he does not mention red mercury. So I'm just kind of wondering. I mean, I respect Dr. Cohen, and, I just wonder, you know.
Well, there's also some work by, Vialis, who's done a lot of work on, the terrorist bombs,
it's
got to do with trucks.
And he talks about the
Israeli theoretical, because I've yet to see any proof of it, but it seems to be quoted by a couple of different sources. The Dimona bomb, which it's along that line, it may be a mispronunciation, but which is enriched plutonium, which
right.
is kind of a cleaner fission type device. And, that was another way. So, I mean, there are many, many possibles, including,
yeah.
as you said, just a directly ignited laser, or X-ray, is also known if you can focus enough of the energy in there. But
yeah.
these are not really transportable type items
that really need
to be used.
No, that's what I discovered, Dr. Ward. And right now, because Foner's work, he produced a lot of material. Hey, listen, he's not publishing anymore. Do you think he's been flown to Guantanamo? I don't even know, right? But he published a lot of information last year, middle of last year and all this. And I shared one of the papers with you.
Yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, go to Google. You don't have to go to Google, but that's one of the search engines. Alfred Gesponer. He's got great papers. Listen, if you've got just a mild science background, I mean, really, can you read Scientific American? You can read his papers. He gets into some heavy math. Go around it. Just assume he's a genius and his math is right. But look at his concepts, and they're just really good. He's not developing brand new things. He's doing like I am doing now. And Dr. Ward is really, right? What we're doing is we're getting the material together and presenting it to the people. So anyway, we're in that area, and I think you said on the phone so we can get on with it and get further into this thing quickly. You
yeah.
said that you thought two bombs would do it, and I think we said that on the phone, as I remember, in that area. And
well, we have evidence of two bombs in the seismic evidence of a 2.1 and a 2.3 earthquake.
2.1, there were two. How do you explain, by the way, the series of boom, 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 booms that were contained in the seismic evidence and in the acoustic evidence gathered by Rick Siegel from the video?
Well, as I said, conventional explosives and thermate had to be started or had to be used in order to hide the more powerful.
The more powerful? Yeah, that's true. By the way, what Gordon Ross said, he said about the abundance of the abundance of smoke or pyroclastic floor or whatever that was. He's an interesting guy. You know, I interviewed him and we covered a lot of points, and then he left a pause there somewhere, and I said, you want to say something? And he said, I want to add something. He said, you know, all of that flow, he said, the colors and the different smoke, he said, you know, these guys are smart. What they did, he said, I think they generated extra amount of that stuff to cover over the pattern of the falling, you know, the major portions of the structure. And I think he's probably right. So anyway, let me move on. We should do this. You know, this is fun, isn't it? You see, am I having fun? I am fun. I think I'm creating value for you and for Dr. Ward, and Dr. Ward's creating value for me. I'm surely telling the truth, and you and Dr. Ward are telling the truth. See, it works every time. I read through your second paper, spent a fair amount of time for it, and I guess I wrote the question out, and it addresses the thing that you addressed. You said, what about the big bent beams, you know, the big beams in that area? And I also gave one secret away, right, that neutrons could do something like this if you have enough of them, because they penetrate and they're very efficient in heating. They're 10 times more efficient than if you do it externally, in other words, by external heating. Now, that was going to be one of my questions. With regard to the aerial photographs, what does LIDAR stand for?
Light detection and ranging. They take a laser and they pass it over the ground at a certain altitude, and they're able to read within, I believe, 18 inches is the specificity of the reading.
Okay.
And many of these LIDARs were seen in other articles, but they never showed the detail and, you know, the scale of what it was, nor what the colors actually meant.
Right.
And in some places, one that was in particular, there was a red that covered all the ground. Anything below 5 feet in height was made entirely red, including the craters.
Right.
And I happened to see a different color of the ground versus the crater at another LIDAR, again,
right,
without scale. And I said, this, something's not right. They're not showing stuff here. And so I started looking around until I found some LIDARs that actually showed what the colors meant and their depth, and it was very significant to me.
How did those depths come about? Do you think there were many nuclear weapons that were set off, or what?
World Trade Center 1 and 2, I think those are definitely biggies, and that's what caused the seismic spikes. World Trade Center 6 appears to have occurred when the last building fell and the dust cloud overtook the building. Within a second or 2 seconds, there was a huge pyroclastic vertical flow that went up from building number 6. And then when we look at building number 6, we're looking at a 35 to 45-foot crater in the middle of World Trade Center 6. So 8 stories of building and whatever debris that fell, and you can still see it in the bottom of the crater, left a pile that is minus 35 feet deep.
So I guess what we're saying, there must have been multiple nukes, right? Is that what we're saying?
Well, this isn't really my area, and I wouldn't, you know, go out on this as fact. Whereas I can go to the craters as fact, but as far as placement, yeah, I think there was one in World Trade Center 2, one in World Trade Center 1, and one in World Trade Center 6, possibly one in 7, but we don't really have a crater fault there, and it would have to have been along a different line.
Well, yeah, that the 7. You know, I say to people with 7, I say you're going into a booby trap there. Here's my secret hope. Are you ready for this one?
Okay.
Some people will pick our information up, your information, and run with it to the nearest attorney, a mean, nasty one, or to a district attorney, and run with this and get something done in this case. The issue is the following in World Trade Center 7. As far as, I mean, come on, that was brought down intentionally by the manager of the buildings, the one that had the long-term lease on those buildings. I mean, he said he denied it later. He said, but the video, the actual PBS special, in it, he says, you know, there was so much destruction around World Trade Center 7, so many fires. I told the fire chief, yeah, let's pull it. And then we watched the building go down. It went down like an elevator. And there was a crimp in the top, and as you and I know, and as anybody looked at Controlled Demolition webpage, where there's several other ones out there. Boy, that's the way they bring those buildings down. It collapsed from the bottom. And I've said to people who are thinking, hey, let's focus on 7, because, hey, that means the government did it. No, it doesn't mean anything. All it means is that probably that manager, that, what was his name, Steinbrenner, whatever his name was.
Silverstein,
right? Mr. Silverstein, he probably did something illegal. He should have never had explosives in the building. You can't rig a building. It takes weeks to do it. So it had been rigged before. So he
can't do it in 5 hours,
right,
in the middle of fires and destruction.
He can't do that, right? So if anybody gets hung in this thing, right, through, you know, insurance fraud or whatever it happens to be, it's going to be him. It's not going to be the federal government. You bring this up in court, and the other side's going to laugh their tails up. They're going to say, come on, It was intentionally done. What are you going to do, say the United States government?
Well, you know that there are many lawsuits against the government and FEMA and New York City because of the cancers. And none of them wants to hear radiation because it's not a payoff answer.
Why is that? What do you mean it's not a payoff answer? I don't
well, if it, because if it's an environmental problem with EPA where they just didn't say that there were environmental problems, they can get money out of that. But if it's the government that put a nuclear warhead in a building, you ain't getting any money for that.
Yeah, that's the usual thing. I'm sure they... Can you imagine Congress doing it like they did? What did they do? What did they do it? The manufacturers of vaccines, there's law now that states...
Texas had a mandatory papillomavirus immunization that they were going to force on...
I heard about that thing. But
that got canceled. But
yeah, but what I'm thinking about is the law that came out with the... The additive that's mercury additive that's been added to vaccines. As I remember, the...
Thionate, thiosulfonate, I believe.
Well, there's a mercury.
Yeah.
Right. And law was generated. It seems to me there's a law been generated that protects the drug companies from any results.
From being sued, yeah.
Being sued. Anyway, we're getting near the end here. Man, I'm getting anxious. Dr. Ward, I'll repeat it for you because I know it's here. Your email address is... It sounds like Edward, but it's EDWARD, and the number 1 and then 9@cox.net. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right.
And most of my writings are on thepriceofliberty.org.
Right.
And if you do a Google search on Ed space Ward space MD, you'll find between 700 and 15,000 hits for my article.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was jealous. You know?
Oh, thank you.
You know, I looked at it, I said, where is this guy coming from? Where did this guy come from? Mars or what? What did he do? No,
well,
but
I have several other things that I write about.
I know you do.
Written about the Great American Holdup, which is about the Senate being able to hold up any legislation.
And they do that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, DU, family rights, just a variety
of different things. That's what I'm saying. I was fascinated when I saw what I was tackling here, so I kind of looked at it. And let me ask you this. Okay, let me give everybody my website also. It's libertycalling.com. I plan to put Dr. Ward's references up there and some of his work up there. I did not. I got behind. I'm probably a week behind on the webpage. And we'll get it together.
You can't do everything, but
you're doing
something, and that's what's important.
That's, by the way, remember I said in the first program, just network you folks. Get together. And what's your mantra going to be? Pass it on to everybody, right? Have fun. Don't do things that are not having fun, or make them be fun. Have fun, create value, and tell the truth. Really important. You'll find your life will change when you do that. I'm not going to just sign you up and say goodbye. I'm not going to do that. I want to ask you a question. Do you have any questions of me? And better yet, as an old sales guy, I'll ask it a little bit different way. What questions do you have of me?
I don't have any, Ron. I've appreciated and enjoyed most of the information, if not all of the information you sent from me. It seems we approach things from a slightly different aspect, but I try and keep things based on logic and so that the average person can understand them rather than going into formulas and
right.
And things like that. And I just appreciated your being on your show and appreciated my conversations with you.
Yeah, you notice I do. I try to keep people, I mean, even logical people like you, right? I'm very careful in the logic. I'm not always that careful in the logic in my life. Come on, I'm a loose goose a lot of times, right? You know, I'm a loose cannon on the deck. But when I'm working in an area that's my expertise in that area, I get really critical. Not critical meaning nasty of people, but I just get really aware of words, how they're used, and everything else. Anyway, time is up here. I want to thank everybody. Hey, you Marines out there, thanks for being around. And Dr. Ward, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. We'll be back next week with Virginia Grushevska. And look at my website. You'll learn all about it. and from the whole team of the MicroEffect team here in Austin and unknown places in the West. How shall we say that? Unknown places in the West. We wish you a great, enjoyable evening. And Godspeed, everybody. Join us again. Tune in to the MicroEffect. We would really appreciate it. Good evening. Goodbye, everybody. Godspeed.
Goodbye.